We're very pleased this time to continue our study in 1 Samuel. We're in the 14th chapter, and last time we'd gotten down through the 30th verse. The setting for this passage is that the Philistines are being routed by the army of Saul after Jonathan and his servant had taken the initiative in attacking them. And there's a very great battle. The Philistines are fleeing. And so Saul has made a rule that no man can eat anything this day until the evening comes and the battle is finished. And he has made this rule so stern that he says that there's a curse to be placed on any man that eateth any food until evening. Well, we see that the army comes to a wood that has a lot of honey in it. And Jonathan, who didn't know that Saul had made this rule, didn't know that his father had made this curse, eats some of the honey. And the people tell Jonathan that Saul had made the oath and said, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food this day." And so Jonathan's already eaten of the honey. It has given him more strength. His eyes have become enlightened by it. He has received physical benefit from having eaten the honey. And so he declares that this is not a very good rule that his father had passed, although he's already violated it and he's now under the curse. He says, "My father has troubled the land. See, I pray you how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I've tasted little of this honey." Verse 30, "How much more if happily the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found? For had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines?" So Jonathan simply says, if the people had been allowed to have eaten of this spoil, if they'd been allowed to have eaten freely of it, then there would have been a much greater slaughter, because they would have had more strength. Now, as we mentioned earlier, Saul probably had some good reasoning in not wanting the people to stop and loiter and feast and become overwrought in the eating of the spoils of the Philistines. But he showed poor judgment in not allowing them to eat some to take the edge off of their hunger, eat enough to gain enough strength to continue the battle. Verse 31, "And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint." So there was a great victory, a great slaughter. The Philistines fled, and they went on all the way over to Ajalon, which is then a city on the border of the Philistines' land. And the people were very faint. That is, they were exhausted from the great battle, from the great traveling that they'd done that day and fighting. And they were also faint from the fact that they hadn't been allowed to eat anything. Verse 32, "And the people flew upon the spoil, and took sheep and oxen and calves, and slew them on the ground. And the people did eat them with the blood." Now it seems that it was already dark now, and so the curse, the prohibition passed by Saul that they couldn't eat anything, did not apply at this time. And so they flew upon the spoil. That is, they took of all of the animals that were available, and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood. Now, as we know, it was against the law of God for them to eat the blood. They were to hang the animals and let the blood drain out. But because of their hunger, they neglected to follow this oracle of God, and they slew them on the ground, didn't let them hang, didn't let the blood drain out, so they ate them with the blood. And, of course, that's a sin. That's a wrong. There was no excuse for having done it that way. There's no excuse for having violated God's law about that. "Then they told Saul, saying, 'Behold, the people sin against the Lord, in that they eat with the blood.' And he said, 'You have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day.'" Now, Saul recognized that this was a sin, that this was something that should not be done, that it was wrong, so he's going to try to rectify this problem. He tells them to roll a great stone unto me this day. And Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, Bring me hither every man his ox, and every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat, and sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood." So he made a provision for them to bring their animals to him, and they would slay them there at this place where this great rock was, and then they would be properly prepared so that they could eat without eating the blood, and then it would prevent them from committing this sin against the Lord. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night, and slew them there. And Saul built an altar unto the Lord, the same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. Now this phrase about Saul building the altar, there's a little difficulty in understanding this, because some interpret this that he simply began to build that altar, that is, he laid the first stone, but he was so hasty in pursuing the victory of the Philistines that he did not stay to finish it. Now, that's just one interpretation of this. This building of the altar by Saul reminds us of the scripture in Hosea 8, verse 14, "For Israel hath forgotten his maker and buildeth temples." It seems that sometimes among those that are the wickedest, among those that have the least regard for God's true will, they want to continue to build temples. They want to continue to build altars. They want to continue to make some kind of an outward physical display of religion, when really their heart is not right with God. And so it said, he built an altar unto the Lord, the same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. Now verse 36, "And Saul said, Let us go down after the Philistines by night, and spoil them unto the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them." So he decided to go on and pursue these Philistines at night, continue the battle, and completely annihilate them. But this was not a wise decision, for these people not only were weary because of an empty stomach, they were also weary because of lack of enough sleep. And here it was night. They'd been pursuing and working hard all day, and Saul didn't seem to realize that they would not be a very effective army to have to try to fight and pursue the Philistines all night. "And they said, Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. So the people acquiesced to Saul's request, to his desire. Whatever he wanted to do, whatever he thought seemed to be right to him, they said, You go ahead and do it. Whatever seems good to you, you do it. Then said the priest, Let us draw near hither unto God." So before they go any further with this matter, the priest suggests that now they approach God and let God help make the decision. Let's send a prayer to God. Let's draw near to God. Let's inquire as to what is God's will in this matter. And that's always a very appropriate thing to do. Whatever our endeavor, whatever job stands before us, whatever decision we may have to make, it's always appropriate to draw near hither unto God. That's the suggestion made by the priest, and Saul heeds that good counsel. And Saul asked counsel of God, "Shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel?" So Saul does ask God for guidance. "Shall I go after the Philistines? Are you going to deliver them into the hand of Israel? Will you give us the victory? What is your will? What is your decision?" And the verse says, "He answered him not that day." God did not give Saul an answer. Although Saul sought for counsel, he asked God a question. He asked for God's guidance on this matter. God did not give him an answer that day. And what this is interpreted to mean is that God did not approve of him going after the Philistines at that time. God would not give him a promise of victory. God would not declare that he was going to be with him. It was not God's will for him to go. He answered him not that day. And so this then is interpreted by Saul as meaning that there's some kind of a sin in the camp. There's some sin among the people. And because of this sin, then God is not willing to guide them, lead them, or even to answer his inquiry that he made that day about following after the Philistines. He didn't answer the prayer, and there's a reason for God not answering the prayer. So Saul says in verse 38, "Draw ye near hither all the chief of the people, and know and see wherein this sin hath been this day." Where is the sin? Why is God not answering the prayer? What has happened? How have we so separated ourselves from God that he doesn't hear the prayer? Now that's a very good attitude for each of us to take. When we see that God is not answering our prayer, when we see that God is not hearing our prayer, what is the matter? Where is the sin? What has intervened? As we know, God is able to hear any prayer. But when sin comes and separates us from God, then this separation interferes with the hearing of the prayer by God. And so we need to determine whatever it is that may be causing the problem. Where is the sin? Let's look for the sin. Let's see where we can repent. Let's see where we can change, where we can better serve God. And so he says, "See wherein this sin hath been this day. For as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die." So Saul declares that whoever has committed this sin, as the Lord liveth, and the Lord is the one who saved Israel, he's going to die. Even though it's Jonathan my son, I don't care who it is. We're going to be impartial in this matter. We're going to put the one to death who is the offender, the one who has caused this great sin to come, so that God now does not hear my prayer. Sin has been done, and we're going to rectify the matter. We're going to put the one to death who is guilty of the sin. But there was not a man among all the people that entered him. Now the people knew that Jonathan had eaten of that honey back there in the woods, that this went against the rule that Saul had laid down. It violated the curse that Saul had placed upon anyone who would eat something, but Jonathan did it through ignorance. Jonathan wasn't aware of the curse that Saul had placed. He wasn't aware of the rule that his father had made about this. And so the people didn't answer him. There was not a man among all the people that answered him. Nobody would tell what Jonathan had done. Verse 40, "Then said he unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side." So now they're going to cast lots and let the lots determine where the sin is. So the first thing Saul does is he divides the camp into two groups. One group with all the people on one side, and the other group with only he and Jonathan on the other side. And they're going to cast a lot and see whether it's the sin lies in the group of the people, or whether the sin lies in Saul or Jonathan. And the people said unto Saul, "Do what seemeth good unto thee." Now they were continuing to completely yield themselves to the desires of Saul. Whatever Saul wanted to do at this point, they were willing to yield and let him do it. And they just simply said, "Do what seemeth good unto thee." Therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, "Give a perfect lot." Now it seems that before the lot is cast, Saul prays to God and asks that God will guide them and give a perfect lot. That is, give a correct casting of the lot, so that the lot will guide them to the proper party, or take them to the one that is guilty of the sin. Give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. So when the lot was cast, it fell upon Saul and Jonathan. So the sin was between one of those two. The rest of the people were free of the sin. The rest of the people escaped the lot. And Saul said, "Cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son." So now we're going to cast to see which one of us two it is, between me and Jonathan my son. And Jonathan was taken. So the lot fell upon Jonathan. He was the guilty one. He was the one guilty of sin, and it was pointed out by the casting of the lots. Then Saul said to Jonathan, "Tell me what thou hast done. What is the sin, Jonathan? What are you guilty of? Tell me what you've done." And Jonathan told him and said, "I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die." Now, Jonathan tells very discreetly what he had done. He just simply tasted a little honey that he'd gotten on the end of his rod. And then he asked in a more or less incredulous manner, "And I must die. Am I going to have to die for such a small, trivial act as that? Is that an act worthy of death?" And of course, this act of tasting the honey was not a thing that was wrong within itself. There was nothing wrong with tasting the honey. It was simply that it was a violation of the curse that Saul had placed. And Jonathan was ignorant of that curse. He could plead ignorance. He did it innocently. It wasn't a malicious type sin. But yet, Saul doesn't seem to take those things into consideration. He wants to show that he's an impartial judge, that he's an impartial king, and even though it's his son that has violated the rule, it's his son that has committed the sin, his son is guilty of the curse, actually, then he is going to be impartial and execute judgment. And Saul answered, God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. So Saul says, there's no escaping out of this, Jonathan. You're going to have to die. This is what God would want. Now, whether or not it's what God would want, we can't say. It's just what Saul said God would want. He's going to do this and more also. And it seems that he even places a curse now upon someone who doesn't carry out this punishment. God will do more than just put you to death if you don't die. And so, thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. So here we see Saul not showing any fatherly compassion, not showing any sense of mercy, not taking into consideration the fact that Jonathan was really a person who did this out of ignorance, and from that standpoint, then he could be counted as innocent. Verse 45, and the people said unto Saul, shall Jonathan die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? Now this began to get the people stirred up. Up to now, they had completely yielded themselves to whatever Saul wanted to do. He wanted to cast lots, if he wanted to fight, if he wanted to stay, if he wanted to pray, if he wanted to build an altar, whatever he wanted to do, the people were willing to let him do it. But now that Jonathan's life is at stake, they begin to ask, is Jonathan going to die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? Jonathan is the one who started this battle. He's the one who set the Philistines to flight. He's the one that led us. He's the one that showed us how to do it. He's the one that took the initiative. And if it hadn't have been for Jonathan, we probably would have been completely defeated. So he brought this great salvation in Israel. God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people forbid Jonathan to be put to death. They just simply say that not only is his head not going to be cut off, there shall not be one hair of his head fall to the ground. You're not going to bring any harm to Jonathan, no harm at all, for he hath wrought with God this day. That is, he has worked with God this day. Jonathan has done the will of God. He's worked in accordance with and in harmony with the plan of God. This man has saved us from the Philistines, and he's done it by working with God. And there's proof of the fact that he and his armor bearer were able to put the Philistines to rout. And then we followed their example and continued in the battle. So he's worked with God this day. And what a wonderful statement it is to be able to say about anybody, he has worked with God this day. And that's the statement they said about Jonathan. So the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. Now the people just rebelled at the fact that Saul was going to put his own son to death. They rescued him that he died not. Then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. So Saul stopped chasing the Philistines at this time, and the Philistines were able to get on back to their own country, back to a place that was more safe for them. And we see then that an opportunity to completely defeat the Philistines is lost. Israel is found fighting among themselves. And when God's people fight among themselves, they lose the advantage that they have on the enemies of the church. And so this is a good example of that very fact. Those in the church should heed the warning that this example gives. We should strive to avoid sowing discord among brethren. We should let brotherly love continue. We should seek to have one mind and one spirit. But when discord enters in and is allowed to dominate the actions and the energies of the people of God, then the enemies of God are going to escape. Whatever advantage we may have against sin, against the enemies of the church, we're going to lose that advantage because we're spending our energies and our time fighting against each other rather than fighting against the common foe. Verse 47, so Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab and against the children of Ammon and against Edom and against the kings of Zobah and against the Philistines, and whithersoever he turned himself, he vexed them. So we see that Saul now has the kingdom well in hand. Everything is well organized. He is leading the people quite successfully, and he is defending them against all foes. And he gathered a host and smote the Amalekites and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them. So that seemed to have been a special battle against those Amalekites. Now the sons of Saul were Jonathan and Ishui, and Melchishua. And the names of his two daughters were these, the names of the firstborn, Merab, and the name of the younger, Michal. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Amminaz. So we see here where the family of Saul is named, and we'd like to note that there is a mention of another wife of Saul's in 2 Samuel 21:8, Rizpah, who seems to be a secondary wife, and there also the children that he had by her are mentioned. And the name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. And Kish was the father of Saul, and Ner, the father of Abner, was the son of Abiel. And there was a sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul, so that this battle with the Philistines seemed to have been a perpetual battle. This was sin that did so easily beset them, so to speak, because they were never able to completely conquer, to overthrow, and to get out from under the yoke of this threat of the Philistines. They had a sore war against them all the days of Saul. And this idea of them having to continually fight against the Philistines, continually have the Philistines as a thorn in their side, might be taken as an example for us today when we have a sin that is so difficult for us to shake. We need to realize that there may be some sins we have to fight all of our lives. There may be some sins that we're never able to completely, absolutely have no more temptation from. And as we're tempted, then we have to fight. We have to continually battle to be the one that overcomes and not be the one that is overcome. And the last thing the writer says in this verse is that when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto him. So that Saul was continuing on the lookout to improve and increase the strength of his army. When he saw any valiant man, any strong man, he took him unto him. He automatically confiscated him or drafted him into the service of the king, into the service of the nation, so that he would have the strongest and the most valiant men fighting for him. So we conclude the 14th chapter of 1 Samuel. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.